Hey, Rob here. I'm with Jonah and Larry. So, Jonah, how are you enjoying the con so far? He's speechless. He's left speechless.
So good. It's speechless. Why are you doing this?
Because we need filler, and this is filler. Filler.
We don't need filler. We're so great in so many ways.
Larry is full of beer right now. A lot of beer. Said beer. It does. I agree.
I'm going to go rock out.
With his... Oh!
Listener warning. Everything about this podcast is offensive and often stupid.
From Game Hole Time. There are some podcasts that you just can't reach. And quite honestly, you wouldn't want to touch us if you did. It's Guys, Games, and Beer!
Yeah!
All right, so we're sitting here live at Game Hole Con. Hidden in a corner. We cleaned up all the beer that was laying around the floor.
Yeah.
We're looking pretty good here, guys.
Yeah, I only see 1, 2, 3, 4 drinks. Considering how many we've had today, only 4 drinks out is pretty amazing, actually. Yeah, well... You finished it. Why are you giving me an empty... Okay, so look, I get the empty can. She drank it, I get the empty can.
There's only 4 drinks because... You know what? Apparently...
Lisa, I may have some more.
If you were a character sheet, you're the maid.
Ow. Oh, wait. I'll take my beer back, thank you. I was nice and I gave you my beer and this is what you're going to do. And this is what you're going to do. Okay. So, no, leave the beer cozy is fine. No, the beer cozy is fine where it's at. All right, it's fine. All right. No, relax. The beer cozy is fine. Sit.
All right, so if you're here for the interviews, shortly right after this, we're going to go right into the interviews, but we're going to talk a little bit about what we saw at Game Hole Con that excited us. I'm going to start because I really want to suck down this gin and tonic.
Okay, it's all you. This all has right. been a great con, so you tell us what you saw that you liked.
I'm going to talk. Honestly, I've been working the booth most of the day, but I did get to talk to the bard.
You talked to the what?
The bard.
All right.
Dan? Those guys are great.
Dan the bard.
Dan the bard. And we've got links down below.
Granger the ranger.
And Granger the ranger, who is awesome too.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, and we listened to the play as well. We got to sit in the audience and heckle him a little bit. We gave him a little bit of love.
Okay, we gave him some heckling love, okay?
The horrible 3D complete concert.
Playing in Larry's basement.
Oh, no.
It's a sex dungeon.
Ooh.
Basement,
ooh.
Sex dungeon.
What's
interchangeable.
Really?
Interchangeable.
No.
That's true.
Never interchangeable.
All right, so... Anyway,
Sex Dungeon comes with lots and lots of gear.
Okay.
Point well taken.
Musically, they're kind of a mix of different music styles, but they all have to do with role-playing games and gaming in general. So, yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. They're very funny.
Yeah, if you get a chance to check these guys out, like he said, we will have links online to their show.
Buy some of their stuff. In fact, they're on iTunes.
Oh, yeah, but wait a minute. So between you two, you got like every CD they already made between you two.
No, they got 9. We've only got 4. Heck, we're going to have to probably get some more tomorrow morning.
Okay, so Nina said they got to buy some more of their CDs. But the stuff is hilarious. I mean, really good quality.
Something about drunk bars.
In fact,
I believe some of the lyrics are, "We drink, drink, drink till we stink, stink, stink."
That's absolutely true.
So...
We made fortitude saves, right?
Well, we made the save. They did the fortitude. So, yes.
Right.
So, every time they... we actually will have a video of them playing online because we did an interview with them, which was brilliant, absolute gold. So, watch that interview as well. It'll be sometime after this introduction.
I highly recommend the Owlbear song.
Oh, God, yes. The Owlbear song.
Oh, good.
Which is the official mascot of this convention.
Indeed.
So the Owlbear song fits this perfectly, actually.
It does.
Yeah. And I don't think they made it intentionally for this. I think it just kind of worked out that way. Yeah, it worked out that way. So, what else did you like about them?
No, basically, this music, they're hilarious, they're fun to talk to, but also, just the music. Quite honestly, the music's really quite good. I like the mix. I really like to listen to a mix of everything. Here comes trouble.
You're getting uncomfortable.
I feel a disturbance.
I feel a great...
Oh, it's quite like
that's. Oh, wait a minute! Like that's never happened before.
Yeah, right. Like in the last 15, 20 minutes.
Wait, so put the mic behind you and let him before he sneaks through again.
I believe we have an immortal.
Hi.
So yeah, we are the only podcast who actually have immortals come and drop in on our podcast.
That's right.
So,
true story. We had a discussion. As long as you're here, maybe you can clear some things up.
Okay.
That Tyler and I had decided that. Since we battled Lords of the Trident, and we actually did bring home the Trident, are we now immortal too?
Ooh.
I would say you're sort of in the realm of that, like, Lord of the Rings, like, 400 years-ish, but you're not immortal, so you get a little extra.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
400 years of
extra
drunk.
Extra credit. 400 years of drunk. I mean, you get 400 years, I'd say maybe about 70 on the liver, but 400 years overall.
So it's great. Right.
Oh,
really,
I think you're being I think you're being generous on the liver.
Bored years, like say 200 years in, and you just don't care anymore, and you're just getting super hammered. I bet it's hilarious.
Oh yeah.
All right, so that's what you saw that you like. He's just going to sneak behind you all again.
I like it.
Yeah. Oh, by an immortal. Okay, so, all right.
Those burst right out of your belly, you know.
Yeah, they do, actually. Nothing like an immortal on your show.
What?
All right. They do. Okay, so I guess let's see what Larry liked at the show.
What'd you like, Larry?
You know, there's this weird thing that happened during the show. No. So you come to gaming convention and you expect the sort of normal things. A little sword play. So maybe some death, some destruction. Right?
I'm still working on the sword play.
I know. Of
continue. All right, we're good with that, okay? Right.
But oddly enough, we ended up playing marrying games, two sides of the same coin. So we played yesterday. We played Marry Mr. Darcy, which I did buy a copy of. It's an independent game. I do recommend it. It's a lot of fun. And I believe we have an interview with creators.
We do. And, Erica was an absolute brilliant interview.
I was passed out in the corner. They told me about it later. And so, true story. You know, and so, but we did play the game, and it was a lot of fun. And the goal of that game, now... The realm of that game is it's 1800s, so, you know, I mean, the roles are what they are. And the goal is for the women players, which can be anybody, obviously, to marry some guy. But, it, you know, it's not about that so much. I mean, that gives you added bonuses. But you can you could actually build your character enough to be an old maid. And also be great enough to be the best victor.
Right.
So,
I think,
so whatever. So
I think one of the winning strategies on the old maid was to become a old maid / writer at the end of the game.
Right. You take it in by a wealthy family who just wants you to barely become a great writer.
Exactly.
But so that being said, but generally speaking, it is positive towards the marrying.
The marriage part of the whole
thing. Part of it is positive towards it. Now, we just recently played another variant of that same theme called Marriage Material. Marriage Material. And the whole goal of the game is to become unmarriable. So...
So the other that is the other side of the coin. You aren't kidding. Okay, continue.
Yeah.
Because Marry Mr. Darcy, you need to up your stats so you can get a husband.
Right. So you're mostly trying, and I feel like it was probably from the guy's proven point of view.
Did you get said? Probably.
I would agree. I think mostly from the guy's perspective, but it still was funny nonetheless because you would get, when it was your turn, you would get a commitment card. So do the laundry. And in your hand, you would have excuses that ranged from, it's an all-night cartoon marathon, or what's another good excuse that you had?
I'm dead.
I gotta wash my hair.
Yes. And each commitment card or an excuse card would be worth certain points. So you had to match the points in order to get out of the commitment. Now, other players could have influence cards, mom cards, as we called them. Like anything from...
She needs grandkids. Oh, ouch.
Mom could say whatever, suck it up, don't be a baby. And those would be worth points as well.
Right. And so you could increase the amount of excuses you need to come up with to get out of that commitment. And if you've successfully gotten out of commitment, apparently she just moves on. And then the next player needs to get out of that commitment. And then whoever...
A lot like real life.
Okay, so now who's the
whoever gets to the point where they're, I'm going to say, fully committed, i.e., 30 points, that sort of like ends the game, and whoever is the least committed is the winner.
Okay, that's not bad. Now, who's the author on this one?
I don't know.
Oh, well, we will have to see if we can.
We're gonna have to figure that one out. I did briefly read. The back of the box, they are out of Illinois.
All right. So they're in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, they are now in our neck of the woods. All right. I think it's an indie game effort.
All right.
And apparently it was...
It was just donated yesterday to the Gen Con Library.
Wow.
Right, which makes me think...
It's got to be fairly new.
Yes.
Okay,
we will keep our eyes on this. It's fairly new. I feel like it's independent. But it's weird how both games were this marriage... sort of thing. It's not what you think of when you come to a con. You know, it's not what you think of in these type games.
Okay.
But both games are tremendous, and I would like to play them both again.
Well, you bought the one game, so we are going to be playing it again.
We are going to play that one, and if I can find the other one...
You will play that
one,
too?
We're going to play
that
one
again, too. I believe
that
would make a good game night.
Honestly. Oh, dude, yeah. Running both ends of the coin for a game night would be awesome.
So it would be game night.
Yes. Oh, concurrent games.
The marriage material.
Right. All right. So, all right.
Where am I going next?
We're going to Mel next.
Mel?
No, go ahead. Actually, what I really want to hear from is Katie, because you actually took the time to register and play a game.
She got really excited about a game, too.
Yeah. I've been volunteering in the games library, the Gen Con library, doing a lot of game triage.
Look at the enthusiasm on that face. Go ahead. Give her the mic.
Okay, so today I played a game called Tree, and it's a super simple card game. Tom, can you help me pronounce the game company? Yeah.
Wait a minute, I'm looking for it.
It's down at the bottom.
Right.
Giga. Yeah, it's really hard to pronounce.
Gigantopithecus.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the creator is...
English major.
And... it's a game where you have different leveled roots and branches, and you have to create trees. You get three trees in total, and there's two ways to play it. You can play really simple or really hard. The simple game, you only have dead cards where you can attack trees that are level 3 or 4. And then if you kill another person's tree, they have less points. The goal is to get to 10 points. Whoever gets to 10 points first, based on whatever level you're on, wins the game. If you want to play it harder, there are more dead cards in the game that you can kill trees at level 1. So it can really screw over some of your class or some of your players.
How many players are allowed in the game?
2 to 4.
So it's a 2 to 4 player game.
Yeah,
what was your time frame on playing it?
Oh, anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes.
Yeah. Fairly straightforward to pick up. You didn't have to go into a lot of it.
And they have a great YouTube video on their site, which is www.gameoftree.com. It's super nice, and it shows you really quickly how to play the game.
Wait, did they give you a free copy of this or something? Because you are really kind of shilling for them.
I don't care. I just love it so much.
Okay, no, that's good. No, shill away.
I really love the game.
So, just saying, they should at this point maybe give you a free copy for that advertising you just did for them.
But then they have other games too, so. Yeah, Tree is awesome.
All right, so Tree is awesome. All right.
Not everybody that walks by is super into acknowledgement.
Well, who did you just acknowledge?
Just random people? Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right, so Ben, how about you?
Well, you guys got to enjoy the con or work the con. And come on, Larry, I need you for a second.
You do need him. Look.
I made Larry's armor.
Yeah, we will.
It's That's not awesome. Center frame, but...
Should show the back of the t-shirt.
So Larry, earlier in the week, says, hey, Ben, here's 3 days to whip something up.
That's why we're doing it.
I don't know. So I said this morning you did art. And then I bought art. And it's going to look like shit on the camera.
Wait. So part of the whole deal with this is we've had Lords of the Trident on the show. And one of the things that they do when they perform is they dress up. They have costumes. And so... I thought, well, I would also dress up because this is a big show for me. It's my set, you know, my set choices. So I would dress up, and so I got myself some armor and that. And I was going to have the Lords of the Trident put on the front. But Ben reminded me,
yes,
and no, you are not a Lords of the Trident soldier. You are a G2B soldier.
No, you are a G2B commander.
That's right. That's commander. Right. Commander.
A lot like Cobra and Commander,
so,
Tom.
And so, if I'm going to have an insignia on my armor, it must be a G2B insignia. And so, Ben volunteered to make that insignia happen.
I was conscripted.
Okay, maybe more than a point.
Okay, conscripted, yeah.
Where did he touch you, Ben? Where did he touch you?
Yeah, you loved every minute of it. But, so, that's more of the backstory of the situation.
And a good backstory on that situation. Go ahead and have a seat again. All right, so, Jonah, what have you seen today that's cool?
Well, I haven't...
The backside of the camera.
Yeah, the backside of the camera.
Jonah has seen so much of the backside of the camera.
Yeah, I did most of the camera stuff.
By the way, I'm going to share something with you. You know, when you go to Disney, and you go to and you go on the Jungle Cruise ride.
Those of you who are following, that was just an achievement. Larry has mentioned Disney. Take a drink.
So
if you go on the Jungle Cruise ride, the one of the reasons you even want to be the Jungle Cruise director is that you get to tell jokes. It's a bit of a stage, right? There are people who are famous who have got their start as a Jungle Cruise.
Okay, wait.
What does this even have to do with it?
Him running the camera today.
Larry,
it's a 30-minute segment.
Every good story has
Silence,
a weight
William
to it.
William Faulkner. No, stop rambling like grandma.
God, if you guys were kidding and interrupting me, I would be already there.
No, I don't think you would.
So anyways, you're allowed to tell various whatever story jokes that you want. But there is one joke that every Jungle Cruise has in it. There's a point where the cruise goes behind a waterfall, and the cruise director says, and I have been on this many, many times, and this is the one joke that every cruise director says is... You've waited for it, and now you have it, the backside of water. And that's why that ties in. He saw the backside of the camera.
If any of you are still listening, we're going to resume the interview now.
Thank you. Yeah. All right, Jonah.
I don't know what that had to do with anything. But
rewatch this episode, you'll understand.
It really does
come together.
So, Jonah, please do tell. From working the camera, the only thing I pretty much got to see was Dan the Bard. He had some funny songs, and yeah, I liked them a lot.
Like father, like son.
Good yeah. Job.
Yeah, love the Bard.
All right, so Tyler, what have you seen today?
I kind of have a clue what you've seen.
I got to test play a game called Siege for the King by Tricata Games or something? I don't know how to say it.
And we've had them on the show before.
Yes, we have. Yeah. And so I got to test this out, and... I guess the best way to describe this game, it's kind of like a blend between chess and Stratego because each piece can move uniquely and stuff, and you both have like a castle you have to defend and a king, and the whole objective is to kill the king. And the best thing that I like about this game, it's pretty straightforward. Once you know like what the characters move and stuff and how they can move through different terrains and stuff, it's really straightforward. But it can get really complex in the strategies you can use, because you can boat down rivers and you can climb walls, you can destroy walls, and I did not accidentally win. I won because I noticed one thing. I had a move that I was about to screw over and not do, but I noticed it, did it, was able to partially take down his king temporarily, kill his healer, while I still had my healer. And if that hadn't happened, I would have lost terribly.
Yeah, literally. I walked up and went, oh my God, Tyler, you have too few pieces. You are going to die.
I thought that too. I was like, it was pretty. You weren't that bad. You weren't that bad. But yeah, I was like thinking,
You could clearly go, oh, you just walked up and you clearly could see, oh, there's a difference between blue and red pieces here, and blue doesn't have enough.
Because one of the things is, in the game, you can build things as well. So I anticipated kind of being a slower game, but he just went all for it right away. I was like, oh shit, I am so dead. Because I didn't respond as quickly. And honestly, it was a lot of freaking fun. I had a blast playing. It was like an hour-long game.
Did you win by incompetence?
What is the name of the game?
Siege for the King.
Okay, and this is by?
Drakata Games.
Yeah, I'm mispronouncing it probably. They pronounced it right a few episodes ago.
We have a link to their game site. They produced a whole bunch of games. This is something that is not out yet.
It's not out yet. They're looking to hopefully, what I was told earlier, is production in February. They're doing some final testing and stuff, and they're hoping in February they'll have production out.
All right. So you are playing. We were playing on one of the prototypes, and it seems to play really well.
Oh, it played
great. Right. So keep checking them out. We will have links to their site on our site.
It
looked like a good game to me. Excellent. I didn't get to play it, but looking at it visually, I'm like, I was intrigued.
Okay.
Certainly.
And now that my segue was murdered,
I don't get to talk.
Oh, you! Oh my God!
I'm so sorry. I thought you talked already.
I didn't.
Oh no! Wait, it's like Popeye with a spinach.
Yeah.
All right, now you can talk.
Now I can talk. I have a beer in my hand. Okay, so I got to see, and I'm going to try to get the name right because I keep wanting to call it a different game, Solar Conquest, but it is Conquest of the Stars. Really, a really good card game that's already available on
a link on our website.
Check out the link below. Really straightforward, great card game. Good mechanics.
Pretty excited to see
good graphics. Awesome. We are going to be playing it tonight after we finish up here and drinking more while we play it. Again, random encounter. Met this guy here. He's published quite a few games. He's trying to get himself self-started even more and get out more places. The one game I've played of his is just brilliant. The game plays extremely well, has great gameplay. We'll have an interview with him after this as well. Watch the interview, get more information about the game. But solid game, solid gameplay, solid graphics. Again, absolutely no complaints on it at all. All right, so I suppose we should take this out so people can start watching the interviews.
We should, because we got a show coming up.
Are we done?
We got Lords of the Trident coming.
Yes.
Yep. So, we're going to watch them.
Yeah, Lords of the Trident are playing tonight. We are definitely going to be watching that.
All right, so you're not going to get a proper extra to this particular episode. We're going to do a couple interviews after this, so stay on the air after this. There are interviews coming. But don't forget to visit us at www.guysgamesandbeer.net. Also, we're on Facebook. We give away free games. We have fun. There's been joking going on all weekend, making fun of us pretty much being out here.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Wait, what?
Oh, did you not see people kind of giving us crap?
No.
Yeah.
Well, you got to watch that. So,
for fun.
So continue though. But free games. He said free games. Follow us on Facebook for free games.
Speaking of that, if you're a Twitterer, at Guys Games Beer, there's no and in there. We're on Twitter and we give away free games there as well. And also cute commentary from Tom here.
Yeah.
Very cute commentary.
Yeah, usually inappropriately, wildly inappropriate commentary, but oh well, it's what we do, okay?
Again, thank you very much for watching the show. Stay tuned for interviews. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, I'm Tom with Guys Games and Beer, and I'm here with
Erica Sfano from Marrying Mr. Darcy. Okay, so is Mary Miss Darcy the company, or is that the game?
That's the game. We're basically an independently self-published game that my husband and I created this this game, and we are the independent producers of it.
Okay, when you say self-published, did you go through a Kickstart, GoFundMe, or something like that?
Yes, I kickstarted the game about 2 years ago, and we had over 1,600 backers who supported our project, and we got our rewards out almost on time, which was really great, which I thought was a success, and it just has taken off from there.
Nice. So, okay, so we are big fans of Kickstarter, so how was your Kickstarter experience?
Mine was really positive. We had a lot of backers, and I'm not anybody. This is my first game, and Kickstarter was really the only way that I could have funded this because I wasn't really willing to take a huge financial risk on this myself, and it was so great to have people who believed in the project and trusted me enough in order to be able to do the first print run, and it has been sustainable ever since then. So.
Okay, so that's a really good thing. So we actually, a couple of us borrowed the game from you last night, and thank you so much for letting it to us. I shouldn't say a couple, a group of us borrowed it. So it's a game for...
How many players?
It's 2 to 6 players.
We had 5 last night, and that seemed like a very good number. The game still flowed really well. The mechanics seemed good at that point. We all were able to play quite nicely. We've developed a lot of questions on this, and some from the straight gameplay. I'm going to start with the first question I had. So... And I'm not going to lie, I got creamed last night playing this game. I sucked at it, okay? Liked the game, but I just wasn't doing particularly well.
I married Mr. Darcy. Thank you.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Congratulations.
That being said, but you didn't win the game. You just married Mr. Darcy. You did not win the game.
No, I didn't, because the person who won the game actually put down more character points for the different aspects, which I should read, which I don't have memorized. The R.
Beauty, reputation... friendliness and wit.
And every one of the heroines has a different aspect that they are naturally inclined to, and you can bump up those various traits with these cards.
I like to call them lady powers.
Lady powers, nice. So in order to attract a suitor, which is your ultimate goal in the game, you have to match what that suitor is looking for with those attributes. So if Mr. Darcy looks for a wit of 5 or higher, and that's the only way you're going to attract him as a suitor.
So again, so now that being said, so she married Mr. Darcy. So this whole game is based on...
It's based on Pride and Prejudice, where marrying Mr. Darcy. It's a little bit of an in joke. It is possible to win the game by not marrying Mr. Darcy.
Actually, it's quite easy to win the game by
it
not
is.
Winning Mr. Darcy.
It
you
is.
Don't have to, I'm sorry, marrying Mr. Darcy. You really could marry any of the characters. It's really a question of getting those cards on the table.
It's true. Well, it's a truth universally acknowledged that all fans of Pride and Prejudice want to marry Mr. Darcy, and so that is a little bit of an in joke for those of us who are really deep Pride and Prejudice fans.
Okay, I kind of missed the in joke. I had no desire to marry Mr. Darcy.
Liar.
Okay, maybe a little desire.
So, this is your first game. What was your inspiration for this game then? Are you English majors? Did you always love Jane Austen?
I just fell in love with with some of the movie adaptations, and then I read the book, and then I read book adaptations, and then there was a web series adaptation that I love, and I thought, I want to make a thing based on this thing that I really like, that other people are making stuff, and I thought there would be an audience because I'm a part of the Jane Austen culture and fandom, and I basically made a game that I wanted to play, and then, other people apparently like playing it too. So that was a real bonus.
Well, now that brings up the point. So what we found last night, so there were 5 of us playing. I think only 2 probably knew the reference, actually, out of the group of 5. Right. Larry did not recognize the reference. I know it mildly. She knows it a little more in depth. And the other 2 gentlemen we were playing with had no effing clue what we were talking about throughout the entire game. But that didn't diminish the game at all, which I think is a strong point in this.
I think you guys, because I was playing against 4 guys, you got a little, how long? The event card stack for 5 to 6 players is pretty tall. So you guys got a little, what are we, do we have to go through all of them?
No, but that makes. But that was a point that we found interesting, and I understand you can, depending on how many of your players, you kind of whittle that down. We had five, so we played with the full event stack, and sometimes in card games, people can be a bit impatient. So we were maybe a touch impatient on that. I was like, wait, well, okay, that too. Oh, and by the way, you had mentioned, hey, you should drink before this game.
Yes.
You were right. You should.
Yeah,
because the voices came out. And Larry does an amazing voice when he's drunk. That being said, Drunken Larry is too drunk to make this interview.
Or you get the party card and you get very excited. We're going to a party.
We had a lot of parties last night, actually.
Well, I find the ladylike behavior really starts to come to the forefront when alcohol is involved. So,
and I love that. In a ladylike way. You actually put that on
yes,
the card.
Yes, it's in the rules.
In a ladylike way.
Yes, it's critical.
Okay, now that's going to be a... Okay, no, they can hear me. I'm talking loud. I project the mic. No, that's okay. So I'm going to bring up a point. So a little sexist?
You know, it's basically from the time period. And, you know, Jane Austen was really a feminist of her day, and she used satire in a way that really was making a point about society. And I really attempted to infuse that same satire and humor into the game, which in today's society is really, I think, even more ridiculous.
Right.
So,
because it's in a way that was socially acceptable at the time to poke fun at it.
I'm saying sexism is guys. I'm saying sexism. We were kind of objects of affection at that point. It's like, you know, who was the best catch? I mean, really, it kind of felt kind of degraded a little bit. Not going to lie. Oh!
It's really interesting. It's interesting when, you know, guys play the game, and they're basically forced to play as a woman, which is not the case in very many like RPGs or other card games. So it's kind of a unique aspect about the game.
And that was kind of cool last night. Like she said, we had four guys and one girl playing.
Yeah.
But again, it didn't take away from the gameplay at all, which I found very interesting. It was kind of nice that way. All right, so because we only played one round before we had to quit for the evening, strategy-wise, and again, I'm just, again, to qualify, I got my ass handed to me last night playing this game, which sounds really bad in a game called Marry Mr. Darcy, but I still got my ass handed to me. It seemed to me a touch on the random side. Is there a hard strategy I should have gone with? Did I miss something strategy-wise?
The game does run a little on the luck side. I think after you've played it a couple of times, like, I typically do better because, well, you know, I made the thing. So I kind of know, like, which women are going to go for which suitors, and that helps a little bit. And I, you know, I have a lot of... So after you've played it a little bit, I think you can kind of find those things and those aspects of the game where you can decide to go one direction or another direction. So if you decide to become a spinster, if you get that spinster card and you get it early, like, that could really be a bonus for you because you don't have to worry about the cunning cards. You can just forget about the men entirely and just focus on yourself, play your highest point numbers. It doesn't matter.
See,
so,
now that's a good solid strategy,
mm-hmm.
which is something I think I missed last night. I didn't see that part aspect of the strategy.
Right.
The first time through, I don't think you get the strategy on. I think you really need to play it a couple of times to pick up on the strategy aspects of the game.
Yeah.
The first time, you really are playing basically on luck.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and the end of the game is very luck-based. It's based on a dice roll, the point of which is that as a single lady in the Regency, you are not proposing, you are proposed to. And that is the situation they were in. So a lot of the mechanics I tried to really draw from the society and from the book itself. And so that's kind of, it's luck-based, but that's... Like, that's tough luck. That's kind of the deal.
Exactly. A little bit of that last night. Damn, again, cannot tell you how bad I did last night. Wow. I could not have played that game worse if I tried. Wait, I did try. I played it that bad. So, yeah.
All right.
So now, you do have the game itself, but you've also now introduced an expansion pack to the game.
Yes.
What is the expansion pack?
It's called Marrying Mr. Darcy, the Undead Expansion. And so if you enjoy fighting the walking undead, then this is the way to add that to your Regency romance and courtship. And it's just a really nice, you know, adds a little more action. So, in the expansion pack, you'll get about, I think it's about 10 new event cards, and that will include undead attacks, mob attacks, suitors are cursed,
You get cool instruments.
You also get instruments of the living, which include cricket bats and broadswords and various smelling salts.
You gotta see this, because this is the best instrument you're gonna get. It's a cricket bat.
There may have been a little Shaun of the Dead influence there may in, have been just in a the touch game.
Of Shaun of the Dead on that. You got that? So, it is, again, nice touch. Nice
Thank
touch.
You.
So, okay. So when did the expansion pack come out at the same time as the game, or did you introduce that later?
Yes, this was a Kickstarter stretch goal. I didn't anticipate that we would overshoot our goal by so much, and so I put that as a really high stretch goal, and we hit it, and so that's how that came to be.
All right.
Yeah.
So the game itself is fairly simple and straightforward. I mean, really, it didn't take us much to pick it up. I mean, we got through the first round. Again, strategy-wise, we didn't get the strategy right away, and that, I think, will take more plays. But the game itself plays very straightforward. Rules aren't overly complicated. I like the fact that you included, where is it here? The card, the order card.
The cards here, for...
Yeah. Oh, the player guide.
Yeah.
So it's really, this is a nice touch. I've seen this done in other games. An order card.
Yes.
Played that at the thing. The order of the game that's going to happen. I like that. And for beginner players, yes. Especially so, we do a lot of gaming where we have game nights. And you'll get people over and you'll say, hey, let's all get together and do something. People who haven't played those games before. Right. And to have something like that, and that's what we did last night. We all handed those out. Everybody knew the exact order of the turns. Yeah. That worked out extremely well. So, a nice touch on that.
Thanks. Yeah.
So you kickstarted this. Mm-hmm. Again, nice card set. Manufacturing, any issues with that?
No. I used Ad Magic out of New Jersey, and Sherry is amazing. She helped me with the box design, and she was just a joy to work with. She works with a lot of independent game designers and really helps us out, because I didn't know anything about game production, and she walked me through the process like a noob that I am. So
that's a big plus. And again, box design is really important, especially with card games. Mm-hmm. You know, how you, again, everything, even the dice, the way you've got the place for the dice, the way the cards sit in the box, everything comes into play when you're actually doing a game like this. So the box design is good. And again, your artwork, did you do yourself or?
No, my husband, Eric Evanson, who does some comic work, has a couple of independent comic books published, is the artist. He did all of the graphic design and portraiture and put together basically all of the artistic elements.
Yeah, the artwork, is that was another thing that kind of drew our eye to it. It had that nice feel to it, period feel. It really felt good as far as that goes. As I always tell people, game mechanics are important, but you got to get people to look at your game first.
Yeah.
If they don't look at your game, it doesn't matter how good the mechanics
are. Right. I really owe him a lot to making it look professional, and he really had a vision for how the game should look as a whole, and I owe him a lot on
that.
Yeah, so.
It really looks good. Any other questions for you?
No, I have no other questions.
Okay. I will go back to, because of the period piece thing. No, okay, she does have a question.
Not a question. Not a question, a comment. We love the Old Maid card. We're at the end. We're to score that big 10 points. That's great.
You should have played that before the end of the game. That's a strategy tip, actually, to play that earlier in the game than later in the game. We were all waiting until the very end to play that. We probably should have played it before and taken our shot at it.
Yeah, so if you draw the spinster card as one of your events and you have that option, especially if it happens early in the game, you can really change your direction. If you get it later, it might not help so much. So a lot of how the game changes from game to game is based on the order of the event cards and how and when they come up, and that might determine your strategy.
I found that out last night.
Well, one other person did worse than you.
Yeah, I know, but that's even worse. But
the reason why is because he knew the story. And refused to be, he got the elopement card with Mr. Whitaker, and he absolutely refused to marry Mr. Whitaker. So he sold all of the points that he had on the board in order to get out of that marriage.
Which was not a great idea.
Because
he'd actually, he came in dead last. He had 0 points. I mean, literally 0 points at the end of the game. So, okay, so, again, from the standpoint is that the game stresses, again, I understand it's a period piece.
Yeah.
Have you had any feedback on that?
On people who are...
maybe take a little bit of effect.
Yeah, and I've
there
had...
There are Jane Austen scholars.
Absolutely, you know. And so, you know, if people have any kind of issues with like the institution of marriage or the fact that women, you know, basically had no other option, and they don't see that as a reflection. It's obviously not a reflection of today's society, and if they have a problem with that, then this game's not for them, and that's okay. And that's, you know, it, like, you can't make something that everybody likes.
Right. And that is exactly how to look at that. So no, but that being said, as far as straight gameplay, nice graphics, it's a good card game. You got, you know, what did I say, 2 to 6? 2 to 6.
Yes, 2 to 6.
2 to 6 players. And again, not a real hard learning curve. Strategy-wise, I think you could spend a lot of time deep diving the strategy on this, where you could, okay, this strategy doesn't work really well, this one does.
Yeah.
But just to start out with, you really didn't have to do that.
You could develop a drinking game.
Right.
You know, every time Mr. Darcy won't dance with you, you have to give
a
shot.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Oh, Christ. Why didn't we think of this last night? Okay. So, the game is?
Marrying Mr. Darcy.
Your website is?
MarryingMrDarcy.com.
Okay. So, we've already bought a copy for Guys, Games, and Beer because this game is that good. So, you should buy a copy of it. Well, it's available on your website, I'm sure.
Yes.
Is it available anywhere else?
It's available in stores worldwide and online at many, many, many locations.
So like Amazon.
Amazon. Like so, yeah, online game stores.
Okay, Prime users, get out there. It's free shipping. Get buy the game.
Great.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
This has been another segment of Guys, Games, and Beer. We'll see you after the break.
What up, nerds? I'm Noob, and you're watching G2B.
Hi, you're back for another segment of Guys, Games, and Beer. I am Tom, and I'm here with...
Brian J. Cano.
And Brian, you're with...
I'm with me, myself, and I. I'm actually premiering our paranormal card game, The Three Pillars.
Oh, okay. So, The Three Pillars is a paranormal card game. What makes it a paranormal card game?
Now, it's a paranormal card game because pretty much all the events in it are based on real... facts, real things that have happened to me and my team and the co-creator Chris Mancuso. So essentially it's a biography of sorts put into game form.
A biography of sorts?
Okay, so you guys are paranormal investigators?
We are. I'm a parapsychologist for the past 13 years, and I was featured on the sci-fi show Haunted Collector.
So we have Ghostbusters here.
You do not have Ghostbusters. Wait.
It's funny. He's making a joke, but actually, honestly, I was inspired by Ghostbusters. When I was 10 years old, the movie comes out, and up until that point, what did we have in theaters? The Exorcist, The Omen, Pinto Spiritus. Like, everything was scary, and there was nothing you could do about it. But Ghostbusters comes out, and these guys, yes, it's a comedy, but they can handle this with tech. We're ready to believe you. And as a 10-year-old kid, that stuck with me.
You love tech, Tuff.
You see, you just hit that mic, and you're right. And that's part of what appealed to me about the whole Ghostbusters thing was, oh my God, not only can you detect and find out where they're at.
So now that brings up a point. You bring tech into the game. But let's talk a little bit more about the game. So Larry, actually, over there, got a chance to play test the game.
I did play it, and I'll just say I did buy it, too.
Awesome, yeah, awesome. Thank you, sir.
it's a great game. It plays really well. I'm going to have to say it does have familiar game mechanics.
I think at this point, every game that comes out, you go, hey, is this like, yeah, it's like that, but with this. So The Three Pillars has familiar elements. We like to say it's like Milbourne on steroids.
Well, see, now that's part of what attracted me to your game, was the game, the actual mechanics of the game. I mean, you've got a great storyline going there. And that's cool, too. But I like solid mechanics in my games. I like a game that I can sit down and play, and the rules make sense. Everything has a good flow. The game flows well, whether you're playing 2 or 4 players. And that means a lot to me. So, yeah, if you've got good game mechanics to start with, and then you put nice art on top of it, a good storyline, you're good.
I think it's fair that, okay, so there is some base mechanics that is resemblant of Milbourne's, which I think... anybody who's played Milbourne's is then going to be able to easily pick it up, which I did. I actually have been playing Milbourne's for years.
I love that
and,
game.
Yeah, and so, it, which is why it was so familiar, and it was like, oh, I can get into this. But then you can get past that and dive into the more nuances of what makes this a unique game of the investigation of the different sites and that kind of, you know, the paranormal sites. Like, one of the sites was Lizzie Borden's house, you know, is an example of one of the sites that you're investigating in. So you're able to sort of focus more on what's different about the game, you know, which is
And also, we have several expansions. There's allies and adversaries, which introduce different elements, new cases, new events. Support team, we've got Batteries Not Required, which is a psychic expansion. And then the last one we came out with, Extreme Hauntings. It literally, it's frustrating, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, describe Extreme, or that expansion, because I was curious about it.
Okay, well, in the base game, you know, you have your familiar elements. With Extreme Hauntings, we introduce the entity into it. So just entities randomly pop, and they are aggressive and malevolent, and they are there to stop you. And every time they come out, you go, "Ah!"
Are they game mechanic wise? Do they pop out on all players sort of at random or equal, or is that something you sort of lay upon somebody?
No, they act upon their own will, so they are mixed into the regular deck, so they pop up whenever they want, and there they are.
Which
their effect
sense.
Takes place.
Right. They're an entity.
Yeah.
They have their own goals.
But that's the thing. You know? On an investigation, that's what we came to find, but now that we found it, we got to deal with it. So there it is.
All right, so I have to ask now. So you guys are paranormal investigators. Why gaming? I mean, were you gamers and paranormal investigators? I mean, was it something you kind of gamers on the side thought, hey, you know, this would make a really cool game?
I grew up with D&D. I was a DM, so my buddy still calls me DM. He still say, hey, make a saving throw, make a charisma check. You know, these are just things that are part of our language these days. I'm an admitted, self-acknowledged geek. I love it. I'm a gamer. So this was a way to combine two of my loves, two of my interests, the paranormal and games. But when we first started back in 2002, we were paranormal guys making documentaries, and we would show up at game conventions, and the gamers like, nope, don't care. Now that I'm in the paranormal, I make a game, I go to paranormal conventions, they're like, yeah, no, we don't care. So I figured, all right, let's get the games at the game conventions.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, we're getting a great response here at Game Hall Con. It's everyone's enjoying the game. We're enjoying you guys enjoying it, and it's, you know, we're aligning the columns.
Yeah, that being said, you guys are working your asses off out here. I watch you guys. You've been demoing this thing literally for the entire time I've been here. You have. I don't think you've gotten up to breathe, let alone anything else.
It's a good thing I like the game, because I'd be sick of it by now if I didn't have so much fun playing it. And to be quite honest, and this is not even a pitch for the game, Chris and I, since we made the game, we haven't played any other game. Like, I love Shadows of Camelot. I love Settlers of Catan. I love other games. We haven't played them because he's like, let's play Three Pillars. I'm like, yeah, let's do it.
Okay, but that's, you know, that's kind of, I'm going to say that's great, but it's also kind of funky, you know, playing your own thing. It's like playing, like, well, a band listening to your own
music.
Not just,
you know? Playing your own thing.
I played it, and I can totally understand why.
It totally helps us with new content, because every time we get in the car and we take a road trip somewhere, we're like, what if we have a card that does this? And then all of a sudden a new expansion is born.
Yeah, so the other part about, again, playing your own thing is, so you actually use some of the pictures you've gotten throughout the years actually doing real paranormal exploration. So the stuff you're seeing in the game is not just kind of, oh, we had an artist draw this up for us, or this is, we went out and took some pictures. This is stuff that you've actually built up over the years as you've been doing real paranormal investigations.
Absolutely, and I got to apologize to our buddy Greg, because he's on all the misfortune cards, so it's like every time Greg comes out, something breaks.
So
it wasn't intentional.
No, sure. I'm sure that was not intentional at all.
It wasn't intentional.
So I'm envisioning you're doing your paranormal investigation, and literally the batteries do wear out.
That stuff happens almost as if the universe has played a card that said, you're done.
Yeah. You know, you're done for tonight. You have to pick this up when you get some batteries.
No more ghosts for you.
Now the game is 2 to 4 players. Any thought of expanding it to like a 6 player or anything like that?
We just started thinking about that this weekend, because we've had a lot of people asking us about that. Right now, we don't have a mechanic.
Geeks had a lot of friends, but
maybe,
they do.
Well, maybe you can take 2 sets and combine them together. Right now, the way the mechanics work, there's enough evidence cards for just those 2 to 4 players. We were actually even thinking of a solo play, which was also, that's kind of sad. But sometimes you just want to play some cards.
Solitaire.
It's legitimate.
Solitary option. I mean, sometimes you're just waiting around for, you know, whatever the case may be.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I mean, in the paranormal genre, I mean, and sometimes you get it with gamers too, who have all those games that you need at least 3 people to play. you don't always have that. So with paranormal people, you're not always doing investigations. So for this, it's like, yeah, well, you're not going to do an investigation for another 3 weeks. Play the game. You feel like you're in it. You know, you feel like you're participating. And in the paranormal crowd, that's been our success there.
Okay, so I will ask that. Is this game popular in the paranormal crowd? I mean, have you gotten like some feedback from people who actually are other investigators or other people who are in paranormal and go, yeah, this really... It feels like I'm doing an investigation. This is exactly the process we go through.
The people in the paranormal get it, and they like it. I think, unfortunately, because I was on Haunted Collector, and I've been known in that world for some time, a lot of it is, hey, I like Brian, I'll buy his game, and then it sits on the shelf. Nah. A game needs to be played. I want to see cards bent and beat up, and I play the game.
Yes.
Play it.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, these guys...
Said, I will mention... Do learn to back bridge so your cards aren't warped all the time.
Two warped.
Thank you.
But we want to see where...
it's like a new dance move.
But we do want to see where on your cards. If you have a card game set up on the shelf, crack the damn seal on it and play the game.
But what, you know, what I love about being here at Game Hall Con and just in the gaming atmosphere in general, they don't know who I am. So if they like the game and they say, oh, dude, I love this game, they're not just trying to kiss my butt because they saw me on TV. And I respect that.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. I did not realize who you were.
I'm glad about
that.
Not
a clue.
That's fine.
What attracted me to it was, first of all, you've got some really cool graphics to start with, which is always the way you get people into your game is by having some sharp graphics, and your graphics look great.
Thank you.
The fact that you went out and got them from real sites, real places you've been, investigations you've done, that adds that extra dimension to the game. But then the solid mechanics, it just, again, I'm all about gameplay and rules that make sense and people who don't cheat like Larry.
They think I cheat just because I win all the time.
No, because he cheats all the time. So.
I cheat. They're just jealous.
Thank you very much.
You know, I grew up in the racing community.
Okay.
And
Millboard makes sense. Yeah.
And, you know, there was a subculture. You know, you went to racetracks and you saw a lot of the same families and stuff. I mean, there was people that came, there were fans that came, but in a way, there was always like this subculture of people who were in it, right? And from kind of what I'm gleaning a little bit is there's probably a little bit of that in the paranormal world.
Absolutely.
What's kind of unique about being in that subculture?
Well, you know, the paranormal subculture, it's one of those things that it's funny because, again, I'm trying to bridge two different, very different groups, but there's similarities in almost every group, whether you're into sports or you're into Star Trek, you're wearing uniforms, you're cheering on a faction. But with the paranormal, you know what it is? You know what the big draw to it is? When you're a kid, you've got Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, Jesus... And one by one, as you get older, these things start disappearing, maybe. And then you get into the paranormal.
Hey, way to be non-offensive.
And maybe. Continue. Maybe. You start to rediscover wonder. And as an adult, you can feel, as you were with a child, that there's possibilities. And there's something. Like, you know, you don't necessarily know what it is, but you know what? It's not just taxes and government and I got to go to work. Oh. You know, it's discovering something that's bigger than all of us.
Okay, now crossing that over to the gaming community, do you not find that also in the gaming community? I mean, you were a DM.
I've been God for a long time.
Exactly. You get to play God. You get to instill that wonderment. What's around the next corner? You don't know what's going on. There's things you don't understand going on behind the scenes. That's part of the joy of this kind of gaming.
Well, being a game designer now, I mean, we've been... Well, the genesis of the card game was, for 13 years now, I've been trying to make a board game. And the problem was, every time we would get to a certain part, we would either get blocked, the rules would fall apart, or it would be too much like this game or too much like that game.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point I said, you know what, let me simplify this. Let's make it a card game. Now that we've cut our teeth with this, now we're working on two board games. And they're coming out well. And just the inspiration for it, like, oh, that's going to work. Oh, that's perfect.
That is exactly what's going to be our next question. So you're working on more games.
Oh, okay. Yes. Absolutely.
I want to go back to the subculture real quick. I like the concept. And we don't, a lot of times when we do these interviews, you know, of course we talk about the games and stuff like that, but they don't often come out of reality in this. So it makes it sort of a different kind of an interview.
Fantasy gaming versus reality gaming.
And here's, There are things in most of that are unwritten rules that you just don't do. You don't do this to another team, or you don't do that. Is there anything like that in the paranormal community?
Well, I mean, there's good form in any subculture, you know. It's like, all right, there's the bro code, there's the, you know, certain things that work out, but, I mean, the paranormal is a little bit of a shark tank.
Ouch, okay.
Just a little bit. You just have to make sure you're the bigger fish.
Okay.
That being said, there's a call for what they call para-unity. And it's like, hey, let's all get along. Let's all respect each other. And it's like, well, the entire reason there's a United Nations is because we don't get along.
Yeah, so basically the call for it is because we can't play well together.
Yes.
Sorry. No matter how we try.
So
on the flip side, there is a lot of coming together and working together. And in the game, we include a lot of figures in the paranormal community because we figured, hey, you're our friend, you're in our game. We want to include everybody because we're on enough of the cards. My face is on enough of those cards. I want other people to be in it.
And always good to give a shout out. It really does bring the community together. Yeah. All right, well, we are here with one more time.
Brian J. Cano.
And Brian J. Cano has got a great game called Three Pillars. And where can people find Three Pillars?
You can go to www.neverstopsearching.com. There's the Three Pillars tab. You can get it. You can get the expansions. There's FAQ and errata. And if you write the website, you're going to get me, so you will get a response.
And I believe your other activities are also reachable at that. So, like, your documentaries you've done and that kind of stuff is also available on that site?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That being said, is there a place else to get the game, or is it only on your website?
Everything is available on our website. The core set is available on Amazon, everything is available through us.
All right. That being said, guys, they also have a really cool playmat that they sell. It doesn't come with the standard set, but I can strongly suggest it for beginners. It's a good way to keep your cards organized, and it's got some really cool graphics of the, what was that, the hospital in?
Oh, that was Byberry. No, Pennhurst.
Pennhurst. Okay, so a really cool abandoned hospital at Pennhurst.
Pennhurst
and
Asylum.
Spooky as hell.
So, yes, it does.
Again, cool graphics on all your
Thank
stuff.
You.
All right. Guys, this has been another segment of Guys, Games, and Beer. We will be back after the break with more.
Hey, this is Rob with Guys, Games, and Beer, and I'm with...
This is Troy Pitchelman from JTP Games.
And we're going to talk about...
Conquest of the Stars.
Well, I heard about this one.
Okay, so last night I got a chance to try a really cool game. So, you're here with the development group, that is?
I'm with ATP Games. It's an independent company.
Right.
We're here with CrafterCon. It was provided by the Game Crafter.
Right, so you're doing the CrafterCon, but you had a chance to actually demo your game to us last night. We looked at Stellar Conquest. I know you've got more games than that, but I want to talk about Stellar Conquest first because... I got to tell you, this one, of all the games I played here this weekend, has really caught my attention. Good, solid gameplay, good artwork. One of these games you can sit down, get into, and really get into. Some nice grudge match elements, which we will talk about, because me and you kind of duked it out last night. And may not have been the best thing to do when we did it, but we'll talk about that as well. So why don't you go ahead and give us a quick rundown on what Stellar Conquest is.
I like your name, too, but it's Conquest of the Stars,
I'm
good with that.
Okay.
It's the beer, I know.
It is the beer. So that being said, I've been drinking since 9 a.m., and it's like in the afternoon sometime, God knows when. So, I'm sorry, Conquest of the Stars, my apologies.
No problem. It's basically a 2-4 player game. You're fighting over different planets, trying to get the higher values. A lot of the strategy revolves around... picking your battles, which ones you're going to fight, which ones you're not. It's basically kind of a bidding, press-your-luck mechanism. You can definitely get a grudge match going where you've decided, I'm going to get this one. He said, no, I'm going to do it. We're going to outdo each other. And we both managed to blow each other to little pieces, letting the third person pretty well take over for the next few rounds since we much destroyed ourselves in the process.
Yeah, we did find that out last night. So what you've got is you've got a card game where they're laying cards out. Each time a round comes up, you flip a planet over. You've got resources in your hand. Those resources are ships, weapons, crews, and various things to enhance your ships, weapon-wise, probe-wise, whatever the case may be. So all players are playing for that single planet, but there's actually one guy who starts it all out. And to some extent, he's at a bit of a disadvantage because he is starting it all out, so you have to kind of strategize what you're going to do. So...
you're playing to 20 different planets, different values. Are they valued from what?
From 1 to 5 on planets with a single win worth 6, and you're trying to get 20. First person to 20 wins. Excuse me. I don't have a beer. That's my problem, Marvel.
See,
I know you tried.
I offered. I'm just going to say.
Every turn when you're playing, you always lead with a ship. That ship can have upgrades, which is equipment, captains, crew. The other player can also play battle damage to kill off your crew, your captains. There's a few special cards for being able to flank attacks where you can play extra ships on your turn. Above and beyond, there's special ships for escorts that can go with any ship, so you can add those into your battle as well. So there's a fair variety of different tactics you can come up with.
And see, and I found that great about the game too. So it's not necessarily, I'm going to put the heaviest ship out right away, because that may not be the best strategy as far as you want to see what the other people are going to put out first. So you may be sitting there with, I'm forgetting the name of your biggest one. Not the Leviathan. What was your...
Sitting there with the, the Matriarch class.
Right, one of
the heavy ones.
Which was like a 7-point ship that you could send out. And not only can you take that 7-point ship, but then you can put like a turret on it for another 3, and you can put a nice crew, experienced crew on it for another 3. So all of a sudden, now you're out there with a 13-point ship. But that may not be the way to lead off, and that's where the strategy and the mechanics of the gameplay came in. You want to see what other people are going to kind of put out. So once you go once around, then you can, again, send out... Once the ship goes, you can't add anything more to it. Yeah. So you have to equip that ship with the crew, the weapons, any kind of defense you want right to start. Once that ship's out there, you don't get to alter it again. So it goes around, everybody puts out their ship, then you throw another ship out, and you're just basically trying to out-resource your other players. Now, again, I didn't mention the player count on this one.
This is 2-4.
Right.
It plays very well at all levels. A two-player game is definitely a different game than the 3- or 4-player game. It's a much more direct, a little faster, more vicious fight in most cases. 3 and 4 is a little bit longer strategy. You've got to look a little farther ahead. So you really kind of get two games out of it in that respect. It definitely plays differently.
Right. And see, now last night we were playing with 3 players, so we definitely saw that whole thing. We probably shouldn't have been looking at it. So we got kind of into a pissing match early on where it was like, oh, I'm not letting you have that. No, yeah. I'm not letting you have that. We were sending out everything we had. I mean, we had literally, you had like 2 cards left in your hand. I had like a card left in my hand.
Yeah.
Exactly. We had nothing left. And Scott was playing with us last night, too. Somebody else we know, another guy, was playing with us last night. And he had a handful of cards.
Oh.
So like the next 4 rounds, me and him are just kind of like...
So you got pounded?
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
He totally dominated the next several rounds. Because you only get cards back on your when you start the round. So... I think I started that particular mess. So then next turn, you got some cards, but you had almost nothing anyway.
Yeah.
On Scott's turn, he gets some cards, but he's got tons of cards.
Yeah, he's sitting there with a handful.
So every round's going around, he's got stuff to play, and we've got like 2 or 3 cards and hoping to get something good to play. So we kind of, that early grudge match really hurts you in the long run.
But here's where, not necessarily, but here's where the mechanics come into play and where I really think that the game shines is, even though we really did kind of go nuts in the beginning, it was easy to balance the game back out again. And the game self-balanced. No one player seemed to get overly powerful cards or underly powerful cards. It really...
So what kind of time period are we talking? Say, a 4-player game on the outside.
Outside, about 30 minutes. Most times, if you're doing a 2-player game and both players are really going at it, I've gone through with my grandson in 10 minutes flat.
So was that a decision? I have found that that shorter games are starting to become more popular so that you can have like several rounds of it, number one. Because sometimes one person dominates a game. And it's nicer when it's shorter because you can come back the next game and maybe have a better round.
Yeah, and I do like the shorter games, partially because I can play them over lunch, partially because I can get people interested in something. We can sit down for half an hour, we can still play a couple of games. I love big 4-hour monster games, but I can't find anybody who's got the time to sit down and do it anymore.
Saying that, never play Munchkin with Larry? 4 hours? No, make it 8 hours.
Dude, Haunting House, 45-minute game, 3 hours.
Yeah, with Larry, it's a 3-hour game. Drunken Larry, we love him dearly, but he's the slowest game player ever, okay?
He'll play an Uno card on your ass in the middle of the game. It's
like,
where'd you get this thing from?
But that is Larry. So, again, let's talk a bit more about...
Well, I wanted to finish on your point on the balancing.
The balancing, rebalancing.
Because we did. First part of the game, we nailed each other hard.
We killed ourselves.
Toward the end of the game, though, we're aiming for 20 points. I think we had 16, 15 and 14 for scores near the end of the game. So everybody was still in it at the end, and it came down to two-pointer, I think, finally won.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It was literally a two-point difference in who won and who lost the game at that point. And I like that
game.
Played
very well that game.
Yeah, and that's the way a game should work. Nobody should get so far behind. So I played another game last night. I'm not going to mention the name of it. And there was two of us who just got creamed. I mean, we were just... The cards just were not in our favor. Things didn't work out. The next thing you know, there's three people who are so far ahead of us, we are never going to see the light of day. And you got to still play the game because you're not going to just quit the game.
Got to stay in it.
And that's when balancing comes in well into play, when good game mechanics count. When everybody knows, you know, I might be down a little bit, but I still have a chance to win this game. Like we were in the very beginning. We were down. I mean,
It looked very bad there for a while.
It did, and I didn't think we'd come back from it. But the fact is that the gameplay works so well and the cards are so well balanced. There's nothing overly powerful, nothing underly powerful in the deck that's going to just win the game. It really worked well. And the 20-point count is a good point count for that game.
It does seem to work well.
Yeah, it does. It really is. It gives you the right time length of the game and, again, helps balance that game out. So, in case you haven't noticed, I'm really enamored by this game. It's really an excellent game. So he's going to give you some...
Number one spokesman.
He is going to give you some links and where... Hopefully, no, we can't... Can they find it online already?
You can buy it now on the Game Crafter. It's Conquest of the Stars, regardless of what you call
it. What I keep calling it. But I'm going to say, so you should go to Game Crafter and you should buy yourself a copy of Conquest to the Stars. Okay, yeah, buy two. They're small. Give one as a gift, okay?
Yeah. Nice Christmas present. Just saying.
Yeah, yeah. That is a good point. The holidays are coming up. I'm actually going to get one here before I leave because it's available
here. It's even fits in a nice 3x5 box, so it fits in a stocking.
Yeah. See?
So how many cards in a deck?
121.
Is there plans for expansion?
Maybe. Depends if it goes well and people like it, and I think of something really that would be unique enough to add to the flavor, but not just, you know, bloat it up or, you know, just to be making an expansion. Right. But if I can come up with a nice concept for maybe a new sector of space you're exploring, and here's the new ships that are specific to that, or new places to explore, that would add a different twist to actually give you that same basic gameplay, but give you some new feature to look at. If I can think of something cool, yes, I will.
There will be an expansion, yes.
So are you a huge sci-fi fan?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. So that brings me to the next point. So, again... Where good game mechanics are important, the game also is visually very nice. I mean, it's got really cool ship design, the weapon design is great, the planet design is great. I mean, overall, and that when you're playing a game, you still want something graphically decent. That's the first thing that's going to catch somebody's eyes, are the graphics. And you've got really sharp graphics on that, so...
Did you do the art, or...?
Oh, no. I do a little stick figure nonsense. I was going to say, you're really lucky that you're seeing the... later edition of this.
Oh, okay. So I saw the nice artwork edition.
This is my official second edition where I actually paid somebody good money to get good art, as opposed to the early edition that has okay art. But yeah, you wouldn't have been that impressed with that.
Well, I'm going to say you're a good investment. Whoever did your art did a really good job. It looks really good.
It is extremely nice art.
Yeah, yeah. So now that's the game I've got a chance to play. I really like it, but you got some other games available?
I do have three or four others. Now that I can't remember my own count. There is Pluto Attacks, which is, it's another sci-fi theme. I'm kind of there.
Yay.
It's a cooperative game, survival in a small town in Kansas. UFO lands. Bunch of teenage high schoolers wake up, and they're the only ones that aren't affected by it. So you've got to overcome the aliens and prove it to the town sheriff and the mayor that something really is happening, win the day. Or everybody lose horribly when the aliens run over the town completely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's usually the way my games go, but that's a whole other issue. So that's one of your games.
That's one of mine. I have a very lightweight, lighthearted one called Farts Are Funny, which...
I did not see that one.
No.
Well, we had an episode recently.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a whole other thing.
It comes after beer, and then, it just kind of happens. It still needs another rewrite on the rules, but it's... it is available, but probably another month I'll have the rules redone a little bit better and it'll be cleaner. It's got some humor value on it as much as anything.
Okay, so now you've been fairly prolific in the gaming thing. I'm going to ask a couple questions. One, how did you get going? What got you into writing your own games? I mean, it's one thing to play and do gaming.
All the way back in high school, which is way farther back than I want to remember. But we'll,
Welcome to our world. Continue. Yeah.
You're with the old crew, you know.
Yeah, we are the old
guys.
We
all are. But,
yeah.
Always playing games and then making rule modifications and tinkering with it back then. I remember making one war game back in college. Just hand-drawn on paper, whatever tokens you could find and pieces together. Always wanted to do that. I worked with computer games for a while trying to write those, but they just didn't feel as... They're just not as much fun, really. I mean, you miss the interaction with people actually having fiddly bits to play with.
Nothing better than fiddly bits.
Yeah. More fiddly bits. And a few years ago, 3-4 years ago, when the GameCraft really started making it practical to do small runs of quality product, as opposed to order 10,000 copies from China and hope you could sell it, where if the GameCraft, I can get one or two copies if I want, and it's like, hey, I can do this.
Yeah.
So I now have some. I just need to get them out there. But yeah, it's like I've done it for a long time, but it's only here in the last 4 or 5 years I've really thought, you know, I could actually do this, not just for myself and friends, but actually try to actually produce something.
Now, so you're using the GameCrafter route, and not like the Kickstarter route. Now, but that being said, you're here for GameCrafter.
Yes.
Who's doing
that? You can do both, right? Is that true?
You can do both.
That's what I was going to ask. That's a good question, actually. And will GameCrafter let you do it?
Yes, they will. They actually have a program where if I want to use Kickstarter to generate my income and get the sales, they will provide the back-end manufacturing of it, and they will tie in with that. They have a bulk order fulfillment system that plays with this very nicely.
Oh.
Which means I can still run the Kickstarter, do everything like you normally would. When I'm done, I can upload all that sales information to GameCrafter. Their bulk order fulfillment will take care of all the processing, get it shipped out, and everything else. I don't actually have to handle the merchandise.
That, okay, so we have another friend who's Forrest Bauer, who is a game developer, and you're right, not having to handle the merchandise, not having to fulfill his orders. Oh my God, that's really an awfully nice way to go.
He doesn't like fulfilling orders.
Well, it's...
I mean, he does it, but...
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot
of
work.
Literally, you end up with a house full of stock,
and
then you have to ship it all out. So that is really brilliant. That's a really nice touch on their part.
GameCrafter has made it, I don't have to do the... I'm going to invest my life savings to try this.
Right.
Hope I guessed right. And now I'm going to spend the next 3 years trying to sell it all and unload it and make it work.
So now that being said, though, but you haven't kickstarted any of your games yet. You've just gone the GameCrafter. So you're self-funding everything right now.
At the moment, this is self-funded. This is also teeny tiny itty bitty sales because not a lot of people know about it.
Well, we're going to change that, though, aren't we?
We are certainly hoping so.
Okay. So.
Part of the reason for me being at this convention today is the... GameCrafter has a whole series of seminars, including one, previous one I was just at, was on Kickstarter.
Right.
A lot of the do's, don'ts by a panel of people who've done a lot of it. So I'm trying to get to that point to be able to really get the word out there, try to build up an audience, and then be able to launch a Kickstarter later on it.
Yeah, we are big Kickstarter fans. So I picked up a bunch of stuff on Kickstarter. He's backed a bunch of stuff on Kickstarter, so it's always good.
We're all sick.
Yeah, we are sick.
Well, I back far more than I should on Kickstarter, right, probably.
So we're going to go ahead and wrap this up by letting you hawk the product one more time because I really like this product. You need to buy this game. The game is?
Conquest of the Stars.
Okay, it is not Stellar Conquest. It's Conquest of the Stars. I know I said it wrong a few times. I'll get it right this time.
It'll
and it is currently available on?
On the GameCrafter.
So go to the GameCrafter site. Pick up a copy of Conquest of the Stars. Definitely a good play, and it has been an absolute pleasure. Rob.
Thank you very much, and we definitely will be linking, of course, in the comment section.
Thank you very much
for coming on, Dan.
Thank you so much, sir. Absolutely.
Hey, I'm Rob here with
Adam Rayrig of Adam's Apple Games.
And we're going to talk today about Bruin USA. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, me too. I'm super pumped. Like, I'm playing today with people at Gamehole, and people are just enjoying it. I think I'm killing it out there. Like, so many craft beer fans here and enthusiasts. It's awesome.
Yeah, you had a packed table when we went out there.
Yes. I mean, it's been jam-packed for at least 8 hours. I was a little bit hungover when I woke up this morning, and playing some games, like, just takes me right out of it, so it's good.
Well, sorry we dragged you away from the table like that.
Yeah, that was a little abrupt, but we needed to get you over here because we do want to talk about Brewing USA.
Yeah.
So, for those of you who haven't watched our show before, we have actually had them on the show before. They were talking about their particular game, Brewing USA, which is a game about running a...
craft brewery. Becoming the best craft brewer in the U.S.
Right. So, and you base this on all real brewing companies.
Absolutely. There real USA craft brewing companies involved in the game.
So, that's actually, that number is horrendous when you think about it. I mean, that's a lot of craft brewing companies that you have to organize with and reach out to. So, last time we spoke to you, it was not that number. What was the number last time we spoke to you?
It was probably 10 to 15 or 20.
I think you were already up to about 20 when we spoke to you about it.
Yeah, it was pretty early on.
Right? Yeah, so you've really, holy cow, have you expanded your reach on that.
Yeah, well, I during the whole Kickstarter campaign, right, I found out that people like really latched on to these breweries and they're suggesting their favorites, and I just started reaching out to like everyone and anyone, and they were really cool working with me. Like, they're like, hey, we'll do it.
You know, it's good for the game because it gives it a more realistic feel.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna lie, it's good for you craft breweries too. It's probably too late to get on this, but it's okay because one of our favorite breweries has already spoken to him, and I understand now are in the game as well. MKE Brewery out of Milwaukee.
MKE Brewing. So a little story about MKE. I was there for my bachelor party.
Oh, dude, good call. Oh, my God.
Brewery tour. Nice. It was epic, and I had like 15 or 16 people there, and it was a ruckus. And so when I was thinking about breweries that I wanted to have in Brewing USA, I was like, they got to be on the list. Just have to be. So
yeah.
They were super cool about it. You know, got back to me, and they're like, we want OG, their beer.
Right.
Tea-infused wit beer, right, in the game, which I had one today. Thank you.
It's what we do.
What a guy. That's super random, though. Like, that beer's in the game. You brought it by the table. We're like, hey, what's up?
It happens to be one of our favorite beers is OG. If you haven't had a chance, and you – I'm sorry. I hate to tell this. If you don't live in Wisconsin, you're not going to get a chance yet. Not yet, but I have a feeling in the not-too-distant future they will get wider distribution. There's a brewing in Milwaukee called MKE, and you said you went there for your bachelor party, which is a good call because the way Milwaukee Brewery does their tours is, let's see, you get a wristband, you start drinking.
Yep.
They call your color on your wristband. They go, look at this piece of equipment. Okay, go drink some more. And then they call your color again, and you go, hey, look at this piece of equipment. Go drink some more. So I am betting you had a very good bachelor party.
It was a great start to a bachelor party for sure. I probably had 6 or 7 beers at MKE before we even got to our second joint. So
wow. It was good. Wow.
How many IPA cards did you end up getting?
You were the if it was your bachelor party, I'm thinking everybody gave you their high content cards.
So in Brewing USA, there's probably, I don't know, I think there's probably 30% of the cards are IPAs.
Really?
It's really funny because it's a reflection of the U.S. market.
Right.
So these craft breweries want to have their flagship beers in the game. They're like, we make IPAs. That's what we're known for. Well, a lot of them are known for IPAs and pale ales. There's a ton of them in the game. But it's really cool because it's a point in time. It's a reflection on the industry. And there's a lot of awesome beers in the game that are IPAs. So.
Yeah. So you said about 30% IPAs, though. Yeah. Okay. I would have actually expected that to be a higher number.
I know. Well, so I had to kind of...
Oh, you balanced it out.
I had to try to talk breweries into other styles. So I would lead with, hey, I know I see that you make some Dunkels or some Hefeweizens or something like that. Would you be interested in this,
Yeah. And something, and again, for your small brewers, again, having that kind of stuff advertised like this, again, I hate to say it, everybody does an IPA. There are a billion good IPAs out there. But if you make something a little more unusual, like a Dunkel.
Absolutely.
Or a Rattler.
Oh, yeah. Oh, super.
Something a little more unusual. Lead with that, especially in a game like this, where people are going to be looking at your cards all the time and knowing about your product.
Now, the flip side of that was some of these breweries had such obscure brews, and I'm like, that's got to be in the game. Like, there was some agave, something agave from Texas.
Okay.
And it sounded delicious. And they're like, oh, we brew it once a year, and we're not sure it's going to be the seasonal next year because of the price of the ingredients is so high. So let's not put that in the game because I don't know if it's going to be around next year. Like, it's always a TBD thing.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so hold up the box a little bit better so people can actually see the box. So this now is, as I've talked about before, I kickstarted this one because the kickstart's closed already because needless to say, you guys blew your goals away.
Yes.
I mean, it was amazing how well they did on that. And this is now what you're holding in your hand.
Production copy. So this is super exciting for me because this is literally the first production copy of Brewing USA that was shipped to my house, and I received it like this week. Opened it up, I'm like, oh, this will be perfect for game hole.
Right. Which means I'm actually probably going to see my copy soon, and I am way excited. Oh my God, I'm way excited.
Yeah. So copies are boarding the ship, and that's been quite a process. Just learning the whole supply chain of a new business is tough. It's tough stuff, but it's gone really well. I'm a packaging designer engineer by trade, so I put a lot of thought and effort into designing a box that would be you know, kind of call out to that craft beer industry, right? So this is a similar box that you might find in like a winery, or you know, you could potentially see growlers even coming in this.
Yeah, or even I'm thinking a good bottle of whiskey and something like that. Absolutely. So.
That'd look really good on your home bar, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly where this one's going. This, as soon as my copy comes, dude, it's going in that bar right there that we built this summer. I need bar games. That's the thing. So, all right. So let's talk one more time a little bit about the game. Again, I know some of you have seen this, but I do want to go over the gameplay again. So as he was saying, you're starting up a craft brewery somewhere in the United States. They're regional breweries, all based on real breweries, and you're basically gathering ingredients.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I will let the developer do it. I'm a little excited about this game, okay?
For sure. So the premise of the game is you're brewing beer and you're trying to take over the USA, you know, become the best craft brewery in the USA. You are auctioning for ingredients, so you're always in a tight competition. You are brewing beer. You are competing over hotspot cities that have craft beer drinkers for area control on the map of the USA. Maybe Milwaukee is definitely in there. Let's be honest. There's actually two Wisconsin cities represented, Madison, Wisconsin, and Milwaukee.
And again, with beers like Ale Asylum and Capital Brewing, we've got some amazing breweries here in Madison. By the way, we are at Game Hole here in Madison, Wisconsin.
That's right. We're at Game Hole in Madison, Wisconsin. One of the persons today playing the game brewed an Ale Asylum Hopalicious beer during the game and said, I think I win because this is my favorite beer. Like, it was so funny.
Okay, that is kind of meta, and yes, I think at that point he should have probably won just for doing that.
So I'm super excited to deliver copies to gracious backers, and also one to your podcast to do, you know, at your own liking. You can have a giveaway, you can keep it, do whatever you guys want. I know you guys
play it on an episode.
We would love to actually do a play test. We would like to do a play test on the episode. Yeah, we haven't done that, and I think that would be a perfect one to do a demo play. Okay, so, but...
It might be sticky at the end. I'm just saying.
Beer, I know. All right. I was thinking, yeah, all right. So, getting back a little more into the play. So, you're up to, I'm sorry, how many breweries was it again? 79 U.S. breweries. So, that is the final count now. Again, this is, we're about out. So, now are you thinking expansion packs?
Yes. So, there's always expansions in mind, right? I'm kind of going along the lines of like it would be pretty cool to give a nod to the canning industry that is starting to infiltrate brewing, and at the liquor stores all you see now is like awesome designs on cans, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Brewing USA kind of has this iconic glassware design as a staple through the cards. It'd be really cool to bring the canning flair through. And also, obviously, add more breweries.
Right.
I would love to see all 50 states covered. I think I'm at 39 or 40 right now, so it's pretty close to all 50.
So, but you do have room for expansion as far as that goes. So that would, and you're right, even adding more states would be a good way to up the expansion on that.
Absolutely. And more states, for sure.
Yeah. Nice.
Like Kansas.
Kansas.
You don't know Kansas.
Could have guessed.
They have some breweries, I think.
I bet they're not in the game. All right, I'm sorry, if you have a whole bunch of dry counties, you're probably not going to be in a game about drinking, okay? Yeah. So, just going to put that out there. So, I like the idea of bringing the canning aspect in, because here's the thing, I'm seeing a lot of more of the craft breweries and microbreweries doing the canning.
Absolutely.
In the long run, that's cheaper for them anyways.
It's a smart play. I mean, it's an efficient packaging.
Right.
A lot of times you're pouring it into the glass anyway to consume it.
Right. But you should be pouring it. You should pour your good beers into the proper glass, okay?
And you're trying to like tailgate, I take craft beers out on a canoe all the time.
Okay.
And so craft beer in a can and a canoe, it's pretty awesome.
You should never drink on a canoe.
No.
No, we went kayaking a couple weeks ago and drank. Well, yeah, we drank a lot. So, but that all being said, no, and you're right, and you're right. Cans are good for that. They're good for when you want to travel with it. But again, like I said, I like the fact incorporating that in the game. That's another aspect, another level that you can add, a complete extra additional gameplay you can add. So you're not just doing resources, finally getting the beer brewed and getting it out to the market. You have to decide how you want to package it.
Exactly. Right.
And that will factor heavily into how the game plays.
That'd be pretty interesting.
Nice. That's a really cool aspect.
Yeah. Speaking of gameplay, I'm going to segue here.
Okay, segue here.
Sideswipe. All right, so how many players?
How many players? 2 to 5 players, and it plays in about 60 minutes. And the game is pretty cool because from a gameplay standpoint, it's a very dynamic game. So every auction is different, and there's a lot of tension around the auction, And as you bid money into the auction, that money has two purposes in the game. It functions as one, money, and then two, as craft beer market demand. So you flip the cap over, it sits on a city now, and that's how many people on the city that want to drink your craft beer. So
I haven't, I didn't take a close look. I bought him a beer out, and I forgot to take a close look. All right, ask him. Okay, so ask him about the caps. Talk about the caps. Show us the caps.
Okay, so I don't have any caps with me because it's an empty box. They're on the table.
Okay, all right. We will get some pictures.
We'll get some pictures. Definitely take pictures. Actually, I didn't yet.
All right. We got to get pictures of the caps. So this is something we also talked about on the last episode. I hate to keep referencing the last episode. Just Google it. It will come up. Trust me. Yeah, we'll have a link up to this one because we talked about a lot of these things. So tell them about the caps.
We were actually talking about how the caps were going to be produced, whether you were going to go with plastic or whether you were going to go with metal.
Actual real metal caps.
So we're 100% going with metal caps, which is pretty cool because it's actually the cap that you'd find on a beer. What that does is it allows two things. So one, you can customize your game instantly. So you can get your favorite brewery's caps and put them in your game as the player colors. So now you're playing with like Ale Asylum or MKE caps or Lakefront or whatever it is.
You know? Right.
So that's really cool. The second thing it does is it adds a really streamlined drinking rule where the more beers you consume, every time you pop a cap, that becomes one additional money throughout the game. So it's actually a really cool drinking rule. Like it's not super intense, but you know, it's like, it just really makes sense.
Jesus, Larry's going to be flooded.
I was just going to say, he's going to win every game at that rate. I mean, if he gets money for doing caps, we're screwed.
Sure.
So.
Cheat.
Well, yeah, of course we will. All right, so.
Drink light beer. Oh, no.
No, not when we're playing this game.
Not here, folks.
Yeah, never, ever, ever, ever. All right, so let's go ahead and tell people where, because the Kickstarter's closed, where can they find this now?
So right now, the game is literally shipping on a boat from China to the U.S., but there is a pre-order page set up that you can still jump on a pre-order and get a close-to-Kickstarter-cost version of the game. And that will ship out with all the Kickstarter backer copies as well. So get in early, and that's some. There's some pretty cool incentive to get in early.
So get in. No, you really want to get in early on this.
Absolutely.
This has got so much potential. Again, we are gonna. Again, as soon as we get our copy, we will do a live play test of it.
Yes.
You definitely have to watch that. All right, Rob, you want to take us out?
Yes, I will. Thank you very much for having us on the show. By the way,
I don't think you mentioned his website.
Let's have. I was just. No. Wow.
He said we could get it on his website.
That's right.
Heterosexual Life Mates.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
So the website is brewingusa.com, and the pre-order page is just brewingusa.com/pre-order. If you want to contact me, I'm at Adam's Apple Games on Twitter, and that's probably the best way to reach out.
All right, awesome. And, of course, links.
Yeah, links. Look below. There are a bitch load of links. Just follow the links.
All right, well, thank you very much for watching another G2B interview. This wraps it up for the second set of G2B interviews. Thank you so much for watching. Don't forget to check us out at www.guysgamesandbeer.net. One more time, your website?
RuinUSA.com.
They drink a lot when they watch the show.
Yeah.
Want to keep their memories up. All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Tune in next week for more from Gamehole Con, Fog Out Games, Giga Robo, Dan the Bard, and Prove It, only at Guys Games and Beer.